It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A team of researchers in Wisconsin and Minnesota are leading one of the first large-scale studies investigating moments of lucidity in people who are living with dementia.
These lucid episodes are when the dementia patient experiences sudden clarity, even after severe declines in memory and cognitive abilities.
An episode could mean that they suddenly speak clearly, recognize loved ones, or show abilities once thought to be permanently lost.
Why do these episodes of clarity happen? And what could they be an indication of? What can caregivers do in those moments?
To learn more, we have one of the lead researchers. Andrea Gilmore-Bikovsky is an associate professor and vice chair of research in the Burby Welsh Department of Emergency Medicine at UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Andrea, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
And Karen Wheelock has been a dementia care educator and advocate for over a decade. She's founder of the Dementia Care Alliance of Wisconsin. Karen, welcome to you.
Thank you for having me.
Andrea, starting with you, can you help us understand lucid episodes? What is lucidity and what do you know about these experiences for people living with dementia?
Yeah, absolutely. So lucid episodes are what I would really describe as an observed sort of transient recovery of abilities that we thought were perhaps lost in individuals who are living with advanced dementia. A challenging thing when you ask me to describe it is that we actually don't have an established definition for lucid episodes, but they have been reported in the medical literature going back hundreds of years and anecdotally are very familiar to people that are family caregivers or professional caregivers that have been working with people living with dementia, but they just really haven't been scientifically studied very systematically.
Do these episodes, do they last minutes, hours? What are they like in terms of their length?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, as I go into answering that question, I want to provide us all with, as scientists often do, the caution that we know some things about lucid episodes, but we're really at the beginning of a focused field of research about these events and this phenomenon. Everything that we know has limitations so far. The duration of these episodes appears like it's quite variable. So some of these are very brief, and some of them could potentially last days.
You've also received a federal grant through the National Institutes of Health. How will you go about collecting and analyzing these lucid episodes? What does this research look like?
In our approach to studying this, we have been conducting what we call sort of a longitudinal video observation study. So we are collecting video and audio data. And really the goal is to see if we can capture these events so we would have direct and observable information about them so we could characterize their features. What we do is we, as much as is possible in partnership with family members and clinicians, we collect video observations and we have people that are trained review them and we generate really detailed data from these videos. So we are measuring using something called computational linguistics, which is really characterizing the verbal output of individuals living with dementia. So things like utterances, intonation, pauses and gaps in speech. We also measure things like eye gaze and eye tracking and gestures so that we have a lot of detailed information about what the person living with dementia is doing and especially how they're communicating because these events tend to show up, it seems, quite a bit in communication behaviors. And then we look for deviations. We look for really significant changes from what seems to be someone's baseline. And what we do when we see those is we find a knowledgeable informant and ask them to review that kind of raw video footage.
Karen, turning to you, your mom lived with Alzheimer's disease for 8 years, diagnosed before you were 30?
Yes.
She loved music, was a reading specialist. Can you describe your relationship with her and her struggles then with memory?
Yeah, for sure. So I had just started working in the senior care industry when my mom was diagnosed. And that made me want to learn as much as I could about Alzheimer's, as, you might do if a very close person of yours is diagnosed with something. I had a very close relationship with her, you know, my whole life, really. Mm. And I am a musician, and music is very important to me. And it also was with my mom, and she played piano, and she liked to sing a lot. And that carried through to caring for her with dementia. And I've noticed it both personally and professionally, that music can affect the brain differently than anything that I've seen for people that are living with dementia or even without dementia as well, you know.
Yeah.
So there were times with my mom where she wouldn't know who I was or know my name, but then she'd hear her favorite Carole King song and could sing every single word about, you know, 10 minutes later.
There was a lucid experience that your sister documented with your mom. What happened?
Yeah, so my mom, in 2020, she had a very random GI bleed and was hospitalized. It was at the beginning of COVID, unfortunately, so we couldn't be there with her. She was pretty much, I was told, not really, you know, she was very out of it that whole week that she was in the hospital. I don't know if it was due to the medication she was on, but also she was almost 8 years into her Alzheimer's diagnosis. So, but my sister had called her on the phone and they had a full out conversation. And that was, I think, right before she was deemed palliative. And then she was put on a hospice. And then 2 weeks later, she passed away. So it was something where she was not able to really have a conversation even before the GI bleed happened. It had been like months for her to have, you know, be able to directly answer questions and have, like, you know, appropriate answers to any questions that we would ask her. So it was pretty amazing to hear.
How do you reckon with that? What do you take away from that experience, even though you weren't there?
Right. So I always say that I was jealous at first. I'm not going to lie. You know, like, she's talking to my sister, but I spent every day with her the last 2 weeks of her life, and I didn't get that, you know. But it does get a little personal, and I did ask my sister for permission to talk about this. So my sister, a couple years prior, she lost her baby when she was 7 months pregnant. Mm. And it was a very, very sad situation. When my mom was in the hospital and my sister called her up to talk to her, my sister was once again 7 months pregnant. Mm. So I think, like, in my head, I'm like, you know what? I think she really needed that.
As you hear stories like this and this one, how meaningful can these moments be for people?
Oh, gosh. Well, I mean, thank you, Karen, and thanks to your sister also for sharing that. You know, I think these moments can be really, really impactful, and I think that's actually one of the most important areas for research to focus on. I think sometimes we also know from our research that the response could be, you know, it's very positive and it's personally meaningful. And sometimes, even though it might be a wonderful thing and an opportunity, there can also be other complications where the response could be more neutral or more negative, just depending on where, you know, a particular caregiver might be, right? Relationships are complicated. And I think, you know, if someone perhaps has a lucid episode and your approach to how you maybe were coping with this really difficult and challenging experience of watching a loved one go through this is to say, I guess they're not here anymore. And then there's this event that tells you, oh my gosh, there have been times where you have been far more here perhaps than I've understood. And right now you appear to really be fully here with me. That's a lot for us to process, particularly when we don't have helpful explanations for family members about how these events are possible. And it doesn't match our understanding biologically of the disease process. You know, we describe Alzheimer's disease and other dementias as, you know, these are progressive, irreversible. Not everyone will exhibit lucid episodes. as far as we know, although they appear to be much more common. But people aren't really necessarily prepared for these events. So, you know, how do you respond in the moment? I think these are all things that people need support with. And I think people also need support to process the event after it occurs. And that's something that we really haven't developed, but I would love to see researchers start to address that more so that, you know, if someone has this experience, the clinician who they're sharing it with, they are able to support that person. This can complicate our grieving. And we need to find a way to make sense of it, even though we don't have all the answers, which I think, Karen, you just said, you know, there's a lot that doesn't make sense, right? And I think it tells us a lot that I really hope we don't need science to tell us about. I think it reinforces what I hope is humanistically imperative and evident, that is, you know, we need to assume that people are there and we need to assume they're present. And we need to do that regardless of what we learn as we keep studying Lucid episodes.
We're talking about new research on Lucid episodes and people living with dementia. That is Andrea Gilmore-Bikofsky, an associate professor in the Burby Walsh Department of Emergency Medicine at UW School of Medicine and Public Health, leading a team of researchers studying these Lucid episodes. And Karen Wheelock has been working in senior care for more than a decade. She has a special focus on patients living with dementia. Karen, you are also a musician. You mentioned the importance of music in, with your mother and caring in Alzheimer's, and you've seen firsthand how music affects people living with dementia. Is there a moment that stands out to you?
Yes, actually, it always comes up in my brain whenever I think about this. About 13 years ago, I was playing music at a memory care facility. It's something that I like to do, just kind of freelance music, old songs that people know at memory care facilities. And there is a gentleman sitting there, and he was in a wheelchair. His head was down. He was not responding to anything. I started playing the hymn In the Garden, and all of a sudden he looked up at me, and he stood up out of his wheelchair. And at first, because I didn't work there, I didn't know the person. I'm like, wait, is this safe? I hope that he's, you know, he's being safe and everything, but he was. And he just started singing every word. And I was like, what just happened? And then a staff member told me that he actually used to be a pastor and that he is able to stand and walk safely, but he has to be emotionally moved to do it. And he was not having a good day, and then he heard a hymn that he recognized, and that just kind of woke him up in a way. And I know that there's, you know, I mean, Andrea might be able to answer this a little better, but I've heard that there's a lot of research in how music can affect the brain in the way to help people.
In terms of music, Andrea, is music or maybe another trigger helping, you know, create these lucid moments, these lucid episodes, or are they not predictable or able to replicate so easily?
Yes, it's a really great question. There is a field of research focused on music and dementia, and I think we know that music promotes engagement, and we learn music differently than we learn language, and so perhaps there are different preserved abilities, and music also may be enjoyable. I think another good question and hypothesis is about what is personally meaningful to someone as an individual, and is music the necessary component, or is it also about what the music and the meaning of that music was to that person? Because I'm thinking of the story Karen shared, and this moved this person emotionally, and maybe other people have other outlets. In terms of thinking about lucid episodes and whether or not they can be triggered, we really don't have an answer to that question yet. One of the potential defining characteristics of a lucid episode is indeed their spontaneous nature, that they're unexpected and they don't have a consistent pattern. So potentially definitionally, that would lead one to say if there's a consistent trigger, then it's not a lucid episode. So this is where it's challenging at this stage in the research, What I can share from our data is that the events themselves, they do appear, again, this is very preliminary data, they do appear to be quite spontaneous in nature and that they're unexpected. So I think the field just isn't at a stage where it can be definitive, but other triggers are being investigated still.
This seems like such a prolific time for research across various different disciplines, Andrea. I'm wondering, where do you want your research on lucid episodes to go? How do you hope it's used?
I think for me personally, I'm really interested in understanding how we can support caregivers, how we can support clinicians. There are 7 million people that are impacted by dementias. And it seems from the studies that are being done so far that a number of them are going to exhibit lucid episodes and someone's going to have to make sense of them. And they're going to need to be supported to understand what to do. We know from some research that some caregivers might make a change to a plan of care, such as someone's code status after witnessing a lucid episode. But we understand these events to be transient and not indicative of a full recovery or a full return, even though they present that way and they may appear that way to us and be so shocking in their intensity that they go away. So I think there's a lot to be done around what are we going to do about that? What types of supports do people need? How can we support clinicians when someone says, you won't believe what happened to my mom? There should be a nomenclature to help people process these events and to help them celebrate them when they feel good and to help them continue on that journey and integrate it with their journey.
Karen, as you hear that, I wonder what comes up for you in terms of an advocate and a dementia educator when a loved one sees or experiences this moment of clarity and what the family should be thinking and feeling in that moment that might go very quickly.
Yes, that is tricky. That is, I feel like working with a lot of family members of people that I've served who are living with dementia, there's always an amount of, you know, wanting to hang on to what they used to be. And just in my experience, I've seen that a lot. And I would think that it might bring some false hope for some folks where they're, you know, they're seeing a piece of their loved one again, but it's fleeting. And, you know, they might be hopeful, as Andrea said, that, you know, they might change a code status based on that. And that's a big decision, right?
Yeah.
I think definitely having support for them would be key.
Well, Karen, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you.
And Andrea, thank you for sharing this research and for this conversation.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
Karen Wheelock is a dementia care educator and advocate in the Madison area. Andrea Gilmore-Bikofsky is an associate professor and vice chair of research in the Burby Department of Emergency Medicine at UW School of Medicine and Public Health. We've been talking about new research underway on lucid episodes in people living with severe dementia and why these moments of memory and awareness occur.